Hello and welcome back to The Shift of Land. I'm Sarah Parker. The Shift of Land is a 13-part series which focuses on the connection between land, culture, and agriculture in New Mexico. This week, we will look at local food and local food economies in the state. Today, food is a huge topic with books such as The Omnivore's Dilemma and with people making an effort to show that it is possible to eat locally year-round. With places like Britain raising awareness on the carbon footprints that our foods make and arriving to our grocery stores, they've begun to label all foods so that people know how far it's traveled and what impact that has on the environment. Local food gains momentum. Farmers markets and CSAs, community-supported agriculture, have support. With the increase in use of genetically modified organisms, countries all over the world have demanded the labeling of foods containing these GMOs. The U.S., which is the highest producer of GMOs, will not label these foods in fear that it will affect consumers' decisions to buy a product. So people want to know where their food comes from. They want to taste the food, rather than the tastes of foods that were picked long before ripening. Where there were people, there was food. Where there were people, there were seeds that reproduced to create an identity for our palates. The market grows foods that are familiar and that a large company knows will sell and make profit for them. Local farmers grow what they can, what they may have grown for generations with seeds passed down from the area and from relations in other areas. It's determined by the local environment, the climate, what the land will support. The food makes us stronger, as it has to deal with the same environments that we do. It knows what we need, and it gives it to us. Diversity in plants is important, as the greater the diversity, the greater the chances of survival for them. Disease will attack one or several types of plants, but it is difficult for it to attack at all. This is Esteban Arellano, journalist, farmer, and tradition bearer.
What we're seeing also is that, you know, and I think as farmers, they're probably not even against some type of genetic modification, as long as it's not so excessive that it changes completely what the original seed was, you know, because there's always experimentation going on. There's always things that are going to be changing, you know. You cannot keep everything the same as it is. And I think corn is a perfect example, you know. If the Indians of Mesoamerica had not experimented with corn, there would not be so many different varieties. But they experimented with corn with different colors and different sizes. You know, I was in Chiapas last May, and just to see the diversity of the crops that they have there, you know, I was in one of the markets there, and I was talking to this man. I had never seen so many varieties of beans, and he said he had 40, and he said, oh, this is nothing. You should come around December. I usually have about 100 different types of beans at that time. A lot of different chilies I had not seen before. Corn's the same thing. And here, if you go to the store, even the stores at Whole Foods or other stores that are supposed to be more in tune with what's going on with the organic farming and with the preserving the diversity, you know, you're lucky if you find five or six different types of apples. Peaches, the same thing, you know. Lettuce, maybe four or five at the most, you know. Yet there's hundreds of different varieties. At one time, there were about 10,000 varieties of apples. Now they say that they're probably down to 2,000. In New Mexico, One time that I was doing some research in the archives, it said that up to the 1940s, there were about 400 different apples in New Mexico. I don't know how many there are now, but I think would be surprised if we would find 200 varieties. Because again, when you go to the store, which are the ones that you find? Double Red Delicious, Golden Delicious, maybe Jonathan. Now you might find some Fuji's and Granny Smith and a few others, you know, that are more supposedly exotic. Peaches, maybe one or two types. Pears, the same thing, you know, maybe the Bartlett and a red pear, you know. So kids that are growing nowadays have no clue as to the diversity of fruits that might be available. Every apple has a different taste. Every peach has a different taste. Every lettuce, the same thing, you know, the taste, the texture, the design of the leaves, the color, you know, they're all different, you know. And I think it's not fair for the kids that are being born today that we're not taking care of this diversity, you know, that instead of creating more diversity, we're cutting down on the diversity. We're partly at fault, like I said, you know, because if we see something new, we don't try it. If we see a new corn, we don't try it because we're used to having one type of corn. The same thing with the chilies, you know, or with the fruits. Introduce new fruits and they'll be there in the market for a long time and very few people will buy them. So as a result, the store owner is going to say, well, you know, I tried these new varieties of Asian pears and nobody bought them. I lost them all, so I'm here to make a living. I'm not going to buy any more Asian pears. I'll buy the barlets that people are familiar with and they buy them, even if they don't have taste. The same thing with the apples, you know, the Golden Delicious are not the tastiest apples. Well, the ones that we grow here are a lot different than the ones you get at the store. But still, if you take an apple from here that's not completely double red, as they are called, you know, people will not buy them because they'll think that they're green. You take a new variety of apple that's kind of greenish, they think that it's not unripened because it has a color green. So it's all a marketing thing that we're dealing with now, you know. And I don't know how we're going to solve that challenge there, you know, about getting people to try different fruits and different cuisines, you know. Because instead of experimenting more, we're cutting more, you know.
Today, many people are dependent on supermarkets to get their food. If the food wasn't shipped on highways and railways or across the ocean, what would we do? I spoke to Terry Badhand and Patty Martinson, the co-directors of Taos County Economic Development Corporation, TCEDC. They explain what they've done to help maintain a localized food economy.
I'm Patty Martinson, one of the directors of Taos County Economic Development Corp.
And I'm Terry Badhand, the other director of Taos County Economic Development Corp, better known as TCEDC. Well, you know, as a CDC, basically what we do is we go to the community that we live in and we find out what it is that the community says they need. And in this case here, you know, Patty and I worked in Denver at the Denver Indian Center Development Corporation many years ago, and that community and what their needs were different than this community here. But this being a rural community, what the people told us was that they wanted to hold on to the land, the water, the culture here, the traditions. They definitely didn't want to have their children having to leave the area, so economics came into play there. And so our job really was to try to match what the community said they needed with tools that are out there. And as a CDC, we're able to access other resources from outside the community and bring them into the community. And then that, you know, increases the economic base here and all those kinds of things. So that's our purpose, is to try to match what the people here say they want or need with tools to bring that about.
And as well, one of the things that's really so beautiful and striking about northern New Mexico, as opposed to many other places in the country, is that here we have living people who have memories of a self-sufficient community where not only the food system, but the other systems were informal but intact. And that interruption in that that community and that culture and that traditional way of taking care of our families and each other is something that people hold deeply as a value and still do. And so TCEDC actually works on quality of life issues, and supporting food, land, water, and the cultures of the people of northern New Mexico has become our mission statement.
Local farms feed families and people who buy their goods from farmers markets. Another model that gains support is the CSA, or Community Supported Agriculture. I spoke to Daniel Carmona, an organic farmer in Cerro, New Mexico, north of Cuesta. He explains his CSA operation.
So, can you explain what's going on here? Sure. Well, we have CSA with 135 shareholders. Some of those shareholders come here and work for 3 to 5 hours a week to get their food. They don't pay me for the share, but they're helping me by being farm workers. Most of the shareholders just pay me in the spring ahead of time, and then with the help of all these working shareholders, we make up all these shares for everybody, and they pick them up once a week, either at the farm or in Taos, where we have pickup points.
Okay. And how does that work?
Oh, well, it gets me money in the spring. People pay me up front, and that enables me to buy fertilizer and seeds and supplies and pay labor at the beginning of the season. And without that spring income, when I don't have any crops to sell, I probably couldn't keep farming. So the CSA is a good part of my cash flow because I get the money early in the year. Then the farmers markets, then I start selling at farmers markets in the summer, and I have more cash coming in. And then in the fall, I have fall shares that I sell that are mostly root crops, things that are stored, and cabbage and onions, things that I've stored. So I get income for the fall doing that. So having cash year-round is important, and the CSA gives me the money in the spring.
Okay. You can. I don't mean to stop you working. I know that it has to be done. Could you explain the importance of local food?
Well, first of all, someday we might need to have some local farmers. We might need to produce our food locally, and if that ever happens, it'd be a good idea right now to support local farmers to get their businesses going, to enable them to expand so that there's a potential to do that. Besides that, the benefits of local food, of course, are that it's fresher. It didn't travel hundreds or thousands of miles to get here. It doesn't use as much petroleum products to produce it. The local food that I know of, all the farmers I know around here in the whole county and other counties, none of them are using genetically modified food or herbicides or pesticides. It's all organically grown. So a lot of the small farms, most of them are totally organic. So you're getting fresh food, just harvested. You're getting organically grown food without toxic pesticides, and you're building a local economy, or more specifically, we need to build a local farm economy if we want to have local food. And as fuel gets more and more expensive, it's going to be more and more important to have local farms, or it's going to cost more and more to get food from somewhere else.
I asked Terry Badhand and Patty Martinson why a local food market is so important.
Well, besides the fact that, as Patty said, it was here, and the fabric of it still remains, as you can see globally, nationally, what we eat is very important. And, you know, importing foods from so far away and not supporting the local farmers and ranchers is a major faux pas. And so, you know, we like to think of things in circles, you know, and so it's come full circle, not only here, but all across the nation, where, you know, local food and food security and all those kinds of things have now risen to, we might have been a little ahead of the time there, but it has risen to the public notice. For us, being Native American, if you take care of the land will take care of you. So, you know, it really fits with our principles and the principles of the people who were here and were such wonderful stewards of the land and took care of the land and the water and all those kinds of things.
The local food movement is, you know, something that's really happening all over the country and really globally as well. And some other countries are perhaps a little bit ahead of us, as they are in universal health care, which is another thing that would really allow our communities to thrive again. And certainly Taos has been connected globally in many ways, and was an old trade route. So that's a part of it. But really, to be able to hang on to some of the amazing foods that we have here, we've been really privileged to be gifted sometimes with some heritage seeds, and people don't always even remember what they were, but when we've planted them in our garden, you know, we have had the most amazing pumpkins and squash and things. Those kind of foods, and as well, you know, even some of the protein-based animals around here have characteristics of having come from this land, so they're healthy for people here. And having done the Taos Food Center, which was really one of our first visible projects, another thing CDCs can do is to provide facilities and places for things to happen. We own it, quote unquote, but really it belongs to the community. So just having done the Food Center and put the word out a little bit, and now, you know, we do our week-long classes, but the impact of that is that people are able to make a living doing something they love to do because there's a really strong connection to the food and to the, you know, kind of unique cuisine that came from blending the Native American foods and plants that were here with some of the Spanish and French and other spices. And it developed into, you know, a real amazing cuisine. So there, that gives people an opportunity in the market to do value added to things that come from the earth here. And, you know, so that's all, as Terry was saying, a part of that circle. And we talk a lot about the circle of community food. But there are many people here that are working on projects, you know, that really have to do with, you know, strengthening that tradition, keeping it going, and doing it in a way that matches technology, modern facilities. You know, you've been in our food center. It's all shiny and stainless steel, and we have to really follow a lot of new regulations around food safety and stuff. But, you know, we're able to do that. And as a group, when people come together behind a common goal, you can do almost anything.
You're listening to The Shift of Land, where we explore the connection between land, culture, and agriculture in New Mexico. Our foods are medicine. They can heal us or kill us. El Día de San Isidro, Saint Isidro's Day, falls on May 15th. La Placita, the Santa Ana Church, and several groups of Aztec dancers in South Albuquerque made a procession from the church to the Acequias waters. The priests, the danzantes, and an elder from the Isleta Pueblo blessed the waters and the land. The procession ended in a piece of land, un campo, which is a community garden. There are medicines grown there, and it's open for anyone to come and grow. Community gardens are important in cities so that children and adults still have contact with the land and with the process of growing. This is Albino Garcia, organizer from La Placita and tradition bearer.
Here, they're my vecinos. You know, we were asked a while back, spearheaded by a maestro here, James Maestra, to be the mayordomos, the caretakers of this here land right here that belonged to the Sanchez familia for many years. So this was their land, this was their farm. So there's a lot of memories here. A lot of people have come and said they used to play here, they used to work here, they used to cross here. Many people in the neighborhood, they walk up and down all day with their couples or exercising and stuff like that. The land is open. These three plots, and there's one right on the other side over there. We're going to take and throw a little medicine on that side too. There are four plots available to all of you. It belongs to you. It belongs to the community. The community fought for this here piece of land to be used in a proper way. It's one of the largest and last open spaces that we have for the community here in the South Valley and in our Mijo neighborhood. So we reorganize people, families, and the schools. There's a peanut butter and jelly right down the street. They work with children, parents who have been incarcerated, whatever. Down the street from there is a charter school for high-risk kids. Westside Community is right over here. Our Mijo Elementary is just on the other side, and we're working with them. They're incubating like this. Plants and seeds to bring over here and transplant. And so this here, what work that we do is for you, it's for the community. We represent various cultures, primarily the Hispanic and the Indian culture and others. All are welcome. And so this is beautiful for us to be able to open it up and share this here piece of land and this blessing and these teachings with all the people. Consider this your room, your land, and your responsibility. And if any of you have time, if you have seed, if you have some sweat to offer, and you want to bring your families and grow something here, you're fully welcome. Every and all people are welcome. We want to thank each and every one of you for being here this evening. We want to acknowledge our ancestors and the relations from all the multicultures that are here and the multi-beliefs. We're honored that you have asked us again and again to come and participate in this. We walk together in unity, and we pray together, and we work together. And that's what this day is for us. So that's what this farm is. The gentleman that was out there with the shovel, here he comes. I passed it over to him. But we, the organization, might be the mayordomos, but he's the one who is really putting his sweat into the earth here now. His name is Joe Garcia, and when he comes up, I would like to honor him. Again, to all the relations around here, all of you who have come, all your background, from the bottom of our hearts, we say thank you, and we're happy. Today is a beautiful day. Thank you to all these seeds and to all the blessings. And thank you to the church and to the dancers and to the elders and the future generation, as we can hear over there. Right? That's what it's all about. So again, I say, El es Dios, y papi hace, omete. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Albino. It's just so important for us to know that we're in an urban area, but food is and water and the earth are all gifts to all, and we need to come to recognize that in ever deeper ways of how we are to produce food and care for the farmers who are producing food and for this land and earth that God has given us. And in this place, we come together with so many cultures and many years and ancestors. And so we'd like to invite Judge Beta to offer a special blessing from his people and for seeds. Thank you so much for being here.
Let me just say this before I start with a blessing. I'm extremely grateful that I can be a part of this community. We live down the river in Isleta, and we've been neighbors for centuries. And this has given me a special meaning to be a part of something that we know is goes back hundreds of years, and to share with you the corn, for one, that I've given Albino for this community, and the melon seeds that I have in my hand, which have been a part of my family for years. These seeds I grew up planting, and my dad continued that, and these are melon seeds that I've kept and continue to grow in my own farming in my garden. But again, I feel blessed to be a part of this community, to be one of you, as much as you are one of us. And again, I just thank you for the opportunity to be here, Padre and Sister Albino, and all you people that have made this such a very, very important part of your community and a very, very important part of our culture. And with that, I'd just like to say a small...
I asked Badhand and Martinson how people can support a local food economy.
Well, given, you know, our mission, you know, a good way to support, you know, local economies and food is to grow, even if it's your own small garden. But it's to, you know, work with the land as it was intended, you know, and to use the water for good purposes. And also, you know, if people are making value-added, you know, products, it's to buy local, try to, as much as possible to buy local. And that helps support and keep the money in the community.
Now, I also think there's a lot of community building that can happen, even if you're cooking your own food product or growing your own garden. You know, our tendency is always to find our peer group, you know, and come together around those issues. And that does a lot of amazing community building because it's very basic. It has to do with our basic needs. One of the things that Terry and I and our whole staff at TCEDC really love is the WIC nutrition classes that we've been involved in for a few years, where young moms, you know, come in and they really, you know, come to get their WIC coupons. But when they get here, they're in, you know, they're able to be in the garden, in the greenhouse, in the food center, doing a nutrition class, taking those whole foods and learning how to turn them into really delicious things that they feed their children. And that, again, also, you know, really keeps that wheel turning.
I asked them what it means to be New Mexican.
I'm not a New Mexican. I'm from South Dakota, but I've been living here for over 20 years. And, you know, observing the friends that we've made and the people that we have made relations with, and that are actually our extended family now, I would say that, you know, it really means to be privileged. To live in a beautiful place, and that probably the most important quality, if you aspire to become a New Mexican, is to open up, be quiet, listen, observe, the wisdom here is very deep. People are very generous. Native people here are very generous with the wisdom. If you approach in a respectful and quiet manner, and probably what New Mexicans would hope is that people who come here would do that. Stop, listen, observe. And then if your heart tells you that you have something to give, that's the time not to come in and say, this is what you need to do. You have to do this, without having put your roots down and, you know, breathed the air and sampled the water and slept and awoken here for quite a while and just, you know, really take some time, detox, and figure out where you are before you, jump in with a lot of advice, because there is a lot of wisdom here and people are not strident about giving it. But if you ask in a respectful way, people will share that knowledge.
And for me, I was trying to think of what it meant to be a New Mexican. And, I kind of believe it. All these states were named and borders were put up and all those kinds of things. But I don't really relate to that, because I was born and raised in Boston, but I don't consider myself a Bostonian either. I think what it means to live here is a lot of what Patty says. It's to have family, to, be with people that have the same values and beliefs that you have. And I think, for me, New Mexico, and coming from a city, Boston was a city, and then through Denver to here, I think the thing that I enjoy most about being here is the simplicity that is inherent here. And if we could keep it that way, that would be really nice. I think it's a struggle, but it's a struggle all over the country. I think as rural people or native people or anybody who's connected to the land would, agree. It really doesn't matter to me where I am as long as those kinds of values are held. And it's a beautiful place. So to me, that's why I like it here. So.
We need to get 75 rows of 4 leeks, 300 leeks today.
Local food is a part of the local culture. If we live here, if we've moved here, it's because we like it. So we should work to maintain it. This program was made possible through a grant from the New Mexico Humanities Council in association with the National Endowment for the Humanities, as well as a grant from the Albuquerque Community Foundation. We would like to thank Jack Rabbit for mailing support, Kit Carson Telecom for internet support, Venado Partners for web design, KRZA Radio, Dusty Yellow Thunder, associate producer, and all individuals who gave their time to be interviewed. The theme music was composed and performed by Fidel Gonzalez from El Caballero Aguila Recording Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico. You can hear full interviews and find more information about these issues at www.theshiftofland.org. I'm Sarah Parker. Thank you for listening.